Hello, welcome to the Anxious Conservative Podcast, recording to you for the first time ever, not through the magic of Zoom, but in person. I'm Liam here, one of the Anxious Conservatives, and I'm joined by my co-host, Monique Poirier.
Hi.
And for the first time, well, not quite, is it the first time that we've had a Labour bro on?
Yeah, I think it is.
It's not the first Lib we've had,
no.
But it's the first Labour bro, and so tonight we're really lucky to be joined here at the Sudema Hotel by Josh Kerwin.
Kia ora, thanks for having me.
Oh, our absolute pleasure. I think we'll crack into maybe talking about why we've got Josh here, which is to try and get inside Josh's head and find out why he is a Labour bro instead of a National supporter. So you always Labour through and through?
Not necessarily. So I come from a more...
Guys, the wine's already arrived. So we'll just...
Thank you.
It's gin for Josh.
Excellent. Superb.
Oh,
thank you.
Best way to record a podcast.
So,
Yep.
Looks great. Thank you. No, I think...
just two of us first.
Yeah. Thank you.
Just cut this bit out. The long...
I'm not going to test it. It's fine.
No, oh yeah. Wine is wine.
Yeah, this is organic Pinot Gris, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And so why is organic important to you?
Because it means it's vegan.
So you know, are you also really a National Party person?
No, I should be a Green member, I've been told.
Yeah.
Or abused.
Anyway, sorry, Josh, continue.
So I don't come from a very political family, but when they do vote, it was usually for National. And so that was kind of my initial inclination. But I went to, I'm solely Catholic educated, and school placed a really strong emphasis on social justice. And so I think the more I sort of became aware of a lot of social issues in our society, my views kind of started pulling towards the left a bit further. And after much deliberation between Labour and the Greens, I ultimately felt more comfortable in Labour.
Yeah.
And here I am today, and I've been a member for the better part of 6 years now.
That's not completely surprising, because of course the Catholic vote in this country was traditionally always very solidly behind Labour.
Mm.
And people don't necessarily understand this, but you know, so I'm the four generations preceding me and my family were all small dairy farmers. And up until my grandfather, they were all solidly Labour supporters, as Catholics and as farmers. And it's really because, you know, there was much more consistency. Well, you might argue there still is, but there was a very strong consistency back then with what the Labour Party was, what it stood for, and what sort of was the interests of Catholics
exactly.
in this country, especially Irish Catholics.
Yeah, and I think that was definitely the experience of my family too. There is some Labour pedigree there on my dad's side with the Irish Catholic farming tradition. Gold mining and stuff like that. But even though I'm a bit more estranged from religion now, I think a lot of those values still sort of guide what I believe. And it's,
are you Catholic school educated too?
I am indeed.
Yeah, so we're all
13 years of it.
We're all Catholic school kids.
Yep.
I mean, it does put something into your bones, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
For me, I will send my kid to a Catholic school regardless because of the pastoral care.
Yeah.
I know some people feel differently, but I was so well looked after in a way that I don't think I would have got at a private or a public school.
Yeah, but even from a political perspective, I could never be a libertarian, for example. Never fully.
Yeah, and I don't think I could either.
Yeah.
No.
Well, you're in the Labour Party, so that's
I'm
okay.
But even then, I think, you know, there's just still a rejection of that philosophy and what I
Well, I think, you know, so if we look at Monique, for example, we'll take one of Monique's big heresies, which is that she is incensed about child poverty, and she is in favour of more state involvement in that, which is not
in
your,
the short term.
Yeah, which is in the short term, but still, it's hardly act red meat,
no.
is it?
Yeah.
And, you know, and in the same way, I think, you know, I can never be, I tend to have more, I suppose, more preference towards free market views, but I can never be wholly ideologically... wedded to it at all costs, because I think that, you know, when you go through that schooling system, you get a really good rigorous education, you get good pastoral care, but you also do get that full holistic idea of the world.
Definitely, and I think too, a lot of Catholic social teaching places emphasis on that whole idea of human dignity and human flourishing, and I think think I have a more secular interpretation of it now, but I think that still guides a lot of what I believe today.
So one of the differences I would say that we have is that Catholic social teaching, and it's funny because the word social justice is in fact a Catholic word, right?
Yeah.
And it's been appropriated over the years, by, particularly by the Green Party, but it is a Catholic idea. I mean, for me, one of the key things is that a Catholic element of Catholic social teaching is the principle of subsidiarity. Are you familiar with that principle?
Yeah, so sort of decentralised.
Things should be handled in community level when they can be. And my interpretation of that, and my interpretation is probably coloured by John Paul II, who was, of course, the Pope of my childhood.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, that's consistent with the idea of having a smaller state, perhaps, or a bigger local government and smaller central government, and all the way down, trying to push things down. Let communities decide at the most where they're competent to do so.
So, and I'm at the point where I don't think communities can do that right now. And so that's why I want some short-term interventions.
So you're right. Yeah. I mean, and it's, so the key thing is where the communities can, right?
Yeah.
I think even, you know, my interpretation of things, I'm probably a bit less, I wouldn't consider myself a very statist person. I think that, you know, I kind of like the whole idea of the capabilities approach. So the idea of the state is to sort of promote human capabilities. So that,
are you sure you're a Labour?
No. Did you read, you don't subscribe to my Patreon. I know that because I check it every day to see that you're there. But I wrote I'll send it to you, but I wrote a thing recently about the essence of modern liberalism being about the idea of, it's still about individual human flourishing.
Yeah.
The idea of modern liberalism as opposed to classic liberalism is the idea that actually the state has a role in allowing that flourishing to happen.
Yeah, I don't consider myself a liberal though, because I think liberalism is still too individualistic for my life. So I quite like the whole idea of, you know, classic republicanism, a lot of like works of Marxism and stuff like that. That kind of is more what I align myself with.
It's so interesting to hear this from you, because the other person, the other Labour bro who I get on really well with is Joe Pagani, who also has that similar, obviously, you know, so you're Irish-Italian.
Yeah.
I think he's just Italian, isn't he?
Something.
Yeah, but it's that full... That, again, it's interesting, isn't it, that I'm not at your throat to try and kill you like I would be for somebody else. And it's because I think we can we can converse in these things in a common language.
Yeah.
Even if we don't agree, we can understand where we're coming from in a way that... And that's because we have that shared subculture.
Yeah, definitely. And I think even, you know, I am a bit more left on a lot of issues, but I still think there is that sort of massive starting point.
Yeah,
so we've talked about this before, but why are you not a Green member and why are Labour?
That's a good question.
That main reason.
I agree with the Greens on a lot of things, and think probably, you know, most things. I think for me, you know, Labour is kind of, I mean, as much as, you know, it might be critical of its implementation and stuff like that, it is still the only left of centre party that can appeal to a broad majority of the electorate. And I think that if you're going to build a broad consensus for change, you do sort of need to bring people with you. Even though I, you know, in some respects, I think this government can do a lot more of trying to bring people with them.
I think there's a real insight there, because one of the things that always fascinates me, which I always gleefully point out, is how upscale the Green Party vote is.
Yes.
It's disproportionately white and it's disproportionately wealthy.
Yeah.
And it is the party's more radical, but the actual working class people in this country,
not interested.
No, well, they share that sort of innate, you know, they have an innate conservatism that brings them towards Labour.
Mm.
And I think that's because there's just that sense from people that, you know, there was limitations in the way the world works. We can't sign up for this whole wholesale radicalism. Mm. I think Labour still I love to troll about how Jacinda Ardern is a Conservative Prime Minister. That's one of my favourite ongoing trolls.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's something truthful about that, which is that's actually very consistent with the Labour Party message. Yeah, they're socialists, but they're realistic socialists too.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, my views are probably well to the left of the median voter, but I often get a bit of a sobering, you know, wake up whenever I go out door knocking a little bit. I'll door knock people who have always voted Labour, and I'll be quite shocked initially at how conservative some of the views are. And I sort of have to realise that, you know, I do live in a lot of us operate in a bit of a Twitter bubble, and the reality is sometimes different. So you do need to bring people with you, but you've also probably got to...
You've got to represent with the community.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, so on my side, on my mother's side is Labour through and through.
Yeah.
That's very similar to your background. Those working class Catholics, like my grandfather on my mother's side, was a life member of the Labour Party, and you know, he had a framed letter from Norman Kirk, and the, you know, and he, but he was like his socially, he was as conservative as anything.
Yeah.
You know, and like that was really used to, I don't know if it is anymore, but it used to be the core of the Labour vote, and it's still there somewhat. I mean, it is.
It's there with a lot of our Pacific communities, especially. And yeah. I don't want to generalise in that sense, but obviously our Pacific group is a generally very conservative, most of our Labour heads. I think, though, there is still that common thing of social justice that you know, it's all together, regardless of how liberal or conservative they might be on politics.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, what's it like to be? So you comment on politics all the time because, like all of us, you know, you've got an addiction.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're
have opinions.
Hello, my name is Monique, and I'm addicted to Twitter.
Yeah. So that means you've got to comment a lot.
Yeah.
You are also a party person, and just for full disclosure, Monique and I are party people too on the other side. What's the tension between being a good soldier and actually wanting to call out BS when you see it, because there is always going to be that.
Yeah.
And there is quite a strong tension, especially when you know, are involved in a particular electorate, you work for an MP and that sort of thing. It's quite difficult, and I still haven't figured out how to fully resolve it yet, because there are many issues, you know, on welfare, on tax, and a lot of issues where I would like Labour to go a lot further than they're at the moment. Mm. But I think the key is sort of having outlets within the party and having people in the party who you know and trust and you can sort of vent a lot of these concerns to.
Yep.
I think it's really valuable. And I'm sure that you two are quite fun as
well. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little bit different, I think, for the National Party, and Monique and I might talk about this later on, but the Labour Party has a very coherent philosophy. Well, perhaps less coherent than it was, but it still is a party with a mission. And whereas the National Party is an anti-Labour party, first and foremost.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, and Monique and I are involved in groups and everything, and you know, in those groups there are staunch monarchists like myself and staunch Republicans, like including people who are pushing at the forefront of pushing for republicanism.
Yeah.
You know, there are Catholics like Monique and I, and there are hardcore atheists.
Mm.
And you know, like, and I know that you also have those similar things in the Labour Party, but you're bound together by something more, whereas we're more bound together only by as a result, it's the National Party is a party of compromise and therefore can only be pragmatic.
And I've often found that quite an interesting split, because when you think about it, you know, the Labour Party, which is seen as the party of collectivism, tends to be very good at uniting around a particular individual idea, whereas the National Party, which has been seen as more individualistic, is more inclined to break off into factions and certain ideas.
Yeah, I think the other thing, apart from being anti-Labour, the main reason I am a National Party member is because I believe in personal responsibility. And I know that a lot of people on Twitter find that phrase really frustrating and annoying and probably cruel. But I do think that is the other thing with National. It's not just anti-Labour. There is this idea that you're responsible for your own future.
Yeah, I mean, I, the reason I'm in the National Party is, I mean, it comes down to the fact that, honestly, my parents are dairy farmers, sort of small farm. You know, while that was once consistent with Labour voting very strongly, it hasn't been for a while. And I was basically always brought up to have, I mean, like a lot of farm kids, I have just a conservative disposition. Like, growing up on a farm makes you like that a little bit.
Yeah.
And not everyone, but a lot of people. And for me, I'm in the National Party because that's where that kind of thinking doesn't dominate the National Party, but it's where the National Party is at home.
That's interesting that you pretty much just have grown up. You've just always known you'd be National. Because I grew up, I still don't know what my parents voted as a child. I know how they vote now.
Well,
but I strongly feel that I created my own.
Well, do you know, I haven't always thought I was going to vote National, because the first political party I was a member of was the Alliance Party.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Greens or something.
It's a crap.
That's right, because like Josh, when I was at school, I would consider myself to be a socialist and quite you know, in some ways quite an extreme one, which I now recognise to be mostly play acting, as is quite often the case with teenagers, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
But I have
still haven't grown out of my stage.
My I've got an uncle who's always been involved in left-wing agitation, and you know, right from the from New Labour to the Alliance to the Māori Party to the Mana Party to the Internet Mana Party.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, that was a big influence for me growing up. But the reality is, I always, underneath it all, if I'm being honest, I always had that conservative streak. And I always, and what really drove me away from being involved in left-wing politics ultimately was actually, and it's ironic, it's really ironic, which was that my strong preference to view things through a class prism. As, as against everything else.
Mm.
And I know that you don't want to oversell it. I don't want to oversell it. But there is that drift towards that sort of class politics towards the centre-right.
Yeah.
And that has, over time, not fully, but become more of a natural home.
See, I find that really interesting. And I think, for me, it's probably a case of balancing both. It's sort of an understanding that Labour is currently the party that captures the working class vote.
Yeah, most of it.
But I also think, for me, you know, there is also that element of balancing it with more socially progressive causes as well. And to be honest, I think Labour is most successful when it's sort of able to balance those two separate wings rather than giving too much preference to a particular side. And a lot of the time, these things are just
But Josh, as with National, and so this, many of my people wear this all the time, is that, you know, the National Party is a pragmatic coalition of town liberals. And this, they're very loosely speaking, because Monique's a conservative and she's as Auckland as they come, by the sounds of it. But like town liberals and provincial voters, that the two of those things make the core of the National Party. When they work together, they actually have a majority of the vote.
Yeah.
Which is why National's in office more often than it's not.
Yeah.
When they don't work well together, Labour gets a lot of those votes, and Labour's in power. So the contest is between which of those two coalitions is going to win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, how are you feeling about Labour progress so far? Progress, is that the right word? I would argue there hasn't been any, but
again, you know, I don't want to.
Yeah, you can't
undermine any, you know, sort of party soldier.
Of course.
Anything, but you know, I think
just don't tell anyone you're doing this.
Yeah, that's right.
Of course, it's a podcast.
And it's a conservative podcast, so nobody from Labour's going to listen to it anyway.
Pretty sure more of our listeners appear to be from the left, though, than if we base
the
it
left,
on...
The left, though. Not necessarily the Labour left.
Yeah, okay, true.
They might be safe, and they might think, oh, one of us. I mean, speaking as someone who, within the sort of, if you had to put a left-right spectrum within the Labour Party, probably trends a bit more towards the left than the right, or the centre, you know, there's a lot of... For me, again, this comes back to what I was talking about earlier about, you know, enabling human capabilities and that sort of thing. For me, the core role of the state is to set, to sort of guarantee a minimum standard of living. And that doesn't necessarily mean it can interfere in all facets of human life. It can't guarantee full equality, but it can sort of guarantee that people have enough to live on.
Mm.
And I think that over the next few years, if we get a third term, and if that third term is with the Greens or whoever, I'd like to see a lot more emphasis on that sort of, you know, ensuring the benefits of everybody, something like a child allowance, expanding state housing provision a lot more, and even, you know, overhauling planning reform so that we can get the houses into the market, because, as we know, housing in New Zealand isn't great at the moment.
Okay, so there's nothing, it's really interesting, because there's nothing in there what you've just said, which really upsets me as a conservative, and I've written for years about my own view, which is that, you know, we should have I wouldn't call it a child allowance. I'd call it the parent tax, cut to the parent tax. frame it.
This is the difference between left versus right framing. Right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But ultimately, this amounts to the same thing. I see it is that our parents. Well, look. I mean, we you know, there's nothing more dangerous. So as a conservative, you want to preserve the things that are good about life, right? That is a core bit. We don't want to jettison the things that are good about life. We know we have to work on the injustices, but we also need to protect the good things. There is nothing more threatening to the good things in life than a revolution.
Sure.
Right?
Which goes back to Burke.
Yeah, right. So that means that, you know, and if you're not, you shouldn't take an overly ideological approach to things like the role of government if it means that you are going to stumble into a communist revolution eventually, because inequality keeps getting worse and worse and worse, and one day that's all people have to turn to.
Exactly.
So from my perspective, you know, I really think that, you know, my big thing is that, you know, like, if we have, if we need to do transfer payments of some sort, then it should be as direct and non-bureaucratic as possible, right?
And I actually agree with that.
Yeah. And so I'm in favour of a child allowance, but the way I would phrase it is to say, look, all parents, right, no matter what their own personal incomes are, all parents are making a massive investment in the future of our society.
Sure. Yep.
It costs a hell of a lot to raise kids. Yep. I can tell you guys haven't had that yet, but, you know, I've got three of them.
I know this because of how much I charged people to dance with me. So
it is a huge expense. Those are our future taxpayers, right? Yeah. They are. They will look after us, hopefully, when we are old.
Hopefully, yeah.
And you know, the way that superannuation works is that it's an absolute entitlement on universal grounds, and that's actually probably for the best. But it does depend on people, you know, having children.
Yeah.
Or to bring in immigrants, one of those two things. And we should actually be recognising that with parents and helping them.
But also, for me, you know, children are citizens too, right? So we sort of have an obligation to make sure that they can.
Well, this is Monique's argument, right? Monique's argument is you can't punish them.
Sorry, someone just asked if you were okay, and I'm saying he's alive.
but also there's that element of, you know, you look at people between the ages of 18 and 65, a lot of them can go, and this I think is an argument for making it, you know, universal and not means tested, is, you know, people aged between 18 and 65, going out and gathering income, it can be difficult for many, of course, and that is usually based around class position and stuff like that, but, you know, for a lot of middle class people who can navigate the bureaucracy, they can start up a small business, find a job somewhere if they have educational money or whatever. Whereas for people 65 and over, we sort of recognise that working is, you know, there are limitations on how, you know, the ability to perform jobs over 65, so providing universal payment. And it's the same with children under 18.
So, you familiar with the 500 plus program in Poland? Have we talked about it before? Have I talked about it
No.
I think I've seen you tweet about it.
No, yeah. It's one of my obsessions.
Yeah.
So, Poland, under a conservative Polish government, eradicated extreme child poverty in 2 years.
Wow.
And do you know why they did it? They made a payment. They set up a payment of whatever it was in their Polish currency, 500, whatever it is, to every mother for every second and subsequent child. It's just being extended to all children. So it was means-tested for first children, and then for every second and subsequent child, it was completely... what's it called, universal.
Mm-hmm.
It was phrased around increasing fertility, because, like, in Eastern Europe, you know, like most communist countries, communism destroys fertility.
Yeah.
Be there to listen to you, men. but it destroyed fertility. Now, the 500 plus program was phrased around increasing fertility, and it perhaps had made a little difference in that. But what it did do was it really just eliminated child poverty, because ultimately, as we all know from the studies, that if you give money to mothers or the primary caregiver, they will spend it on the children.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that even a similar approach is being tried in Canada under Justin Trudeau's government. I'm not really a Justin Trudeau fan, he's too centrist for me. But, you know, his government introduced a Canada child benefit that sort of operates along similar lines to the Polish model. And some states, like Alberta, actually implemented top-ups to that.
Yeah.
And they've halved child poverty in a lot of those states.
So it is expensive to do.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, though, is that you've got to think, well, what is the cost of actually letting things continue to go as they are?
Exactly.
And that is the long-term cost that I don't want to pay, frankly.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And it's in many sense, poverty represents a sort of a waste of human potential.
Yeah, and it creates the risk of revolutionary, you know, like if you don't take the edges. So we have, capitalism is fantastic for allocating resources efficiently and creating growth, but it creates, probably tends towards a monopoly, it tends towards, because it tends toward efficiency, it tends to leave people on the scrap heap, to be honest.
Yep.
And if you don't take the edges off it, that is not a system that humans are going to put up with.
Yeah, definitely. And it's quite interesting that you say that, because, I mean, you're coming at that from a conservative perspective, and you have heard a lot of social democrats use quite similar lines.
Well, there's actually, this is the thing, this is what I'm trying to get at, is actually there is much more common, like, it's, dare I say it, I mean, you bristle at it, and maybe you will too, Monique, but dare I say it, you know, even if you're intellectually sort of more one way, more towards the, well, not extreme, but you're more ideological intellectually, I think everyone at this table is in practice appreciative of the need for centrism to an extent, or realism in politics.
Yeah.
Because I know you keep saying this, but actually you keep coming back and coming up with centrist statements.
Yeah, you do. You do.
Oh, no. Oh no!
I'm not going to call you a Blairite, but but you keep coming, you know. Like, and I don't want to destroy your self-image, but you keep couching things in centrist terms. But the point of that is that.
But I think also it's sort of a realization that actually the best way to sort of build consensus for one of these programs is to sort of adopt certain language methods.
But let's look at where the consensus in this country is, right? So this is my big criticism of MMP, right? So under MMP. Both of the main two parties, they try to maximise their vote, and then they get an assist from the Greens in the case of Labour, and their ally, good allies, New Zealand First, if they're around, and then on the right we get an assist from the ACT Party.
Yeah.
Generally, so that
and sometimes you said first on the party. Just saying.
Just once.
Just saying.
Twice for you guys, not first. But the result of that is right is that going into coalition pulls you away from the centre a little bit, but the vast majority of the country is voting in that centre ground.
Yes.
All right? And that is my criticism of UNP. And that's where I think the tail wagging the dog sort of rhetoric, while overblown, actually does make a point, which is that most of the party, most of the country, either tends a little bit to the left or tends a little bit to the right or is in the centre. That's where the consensus is.
Mm.
And that's where we can actually build programs that will last longer than one government.
Yeah, I somewhat agree with that. You know,
So are you saying we should have a grand coalition between...
No, I don't. No, that would be bad.
I would object to that.
No. That would be bad. And we have an adversarial system.
Yes.
And that's important that we have the adversarial system. I mean, my own personal view, my own heretical view, is that actually an FPP, which delivers one centrist government or the other, is actually an ideal system.
I am in favour.
But, you know, that will never happen again, annoyingly.
No.
And actually, FPP probably needed to be reformed in some ways because, you know, we delivered two successive governments that just disregarded their, you know, like...
Well, that's it too. I mean, that's where the push for MMP came from, was broadly the reforms that were
unbridled power.
Yeah.
With FPP, we wouldn't get patsy questions, that's for sure. Not like the ones that we get currently. That's one of my bugaboos. Oh, man.
I mean, like, to me, you know, my view, Monique, is that actually Parliament doesn't matter. I don't really care about Parliament
anymore.
But
I'm with Liam on this one. I have only watched Parliament TV maybe two or three times in my life, and I'm quite happy to
prefer they were doing better things with their time.
Parliament, with parliamentary debates, right? So what's the point of a debate? The point of a debate is to have an argument to try and win people over. Because has anyone ever changed their mind recently on the parliamentary debate?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's theatre. You're preaching to the choir. It's select committees with the interest of
Get rid of debates and get rid of questions.
Power resides in the beehive, not Parliament.
Yeah.
That's our system, right?
Yeah.
And select committees do vital and interesting work. But they do it away from the cameras generally, which is why they're generally pretty good,
Exactly.
There's no performing.
Have you guys watched the proceedings of the American Congress? It's way worse than ours,
I haven't.
Everyone's just trying to create viral moments all the time. That's all they're doing.
It is quite, I suppose, performative.
Yeah. Everyone just wants to be that next viral sensation.
Yeah.
I've long found American politics a bit too depressing to watch.
Oh, absolutely.
So tune out. I think I watched a bit of Congress after the electoral college results were certified
post-riot,
but
Well, you know, like...
There's only so much I can handle.
You're very... So, you're in the electorate for with Deborah Russell, right, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're very well suited because to Deborah Russell, who's Josh's MP. Was my friend, from, because she's an academic and she had a stint in Palmerston North and everything like that, and sort of we became friends in Palmerston North.
Red Deb.
Exactly. But you know, I remember that she and I were on opposite sides of a public debate at the Palmerston North Library in front of the Women's Voters League or whatever it was called on the TPP. And of course, she was arguing that we should never adopt the TPP. You know, that's a thing for another a story for another day, since they turned around and did adopt it.
I was
pro. Yeah, I know. And afterwards, she said, "Oh, you know, because you know we get on really well." And she said, "Oh, look, for someone who's on the left of the party, you know." And I was like, "Really? Are you? I suppose you are, but actually, you know, like, you know, we get on really pretty well." And my question for you is. Do you think when you're in a party and you're in an institutional party, you have the understanding of the limitations and the difficulties?
Mm.
Do you have some fellow feeling for members of the other party, because just out of solidarity or empathy?
When you say the other party, you're talking about, in my case, the traditional party.
So yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think there's a wide gulf between, say, you two and some of the right-wing Twitter accounts who will just drop off. And I'm sure you guys feel the same way about some of the left-wing accounts.
No. Do you want to know what's really interesting? Is that, so you look at there was a study in The Guardian a few years ago, and it was like, what are the proportions of Twitter, right? And it was like, the biggest one was by far, right, was centre-left. The next biggest one was extreme, like hard left.
Sure.
The next biggest one was extreme right.
Mm.
And centre right was 8%.
Oh, okay. So that's why I feel like I'm just talking to a brick wall 95% of the time.
It's a predominantly sort of centre left medium.
Sure.
And that means it attacks hardcore rightists who just thrive on being jerks, you know,
trying to
being revolting,
and
because they don't really mind about not, you know, being rejected and everything like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Whereas so many kind of centre writers are probably 8% of Twitter.
Sure. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think also having grown up in a more conservative environment, you understand that you can't solely socialise or interact with people. I think exactly the way you do. And to be honest, most of my friends obviously do lean left, but, you know, not all of them.
Yeah.
I think it's healthy that that's the case.
But you know, like, when you're out there putting hoardings up at whatever this local sign farm is, and you see, some Labour bros, you know, like, doing it, you know, like, replacing a broken sign, and you just have that, give them that look, and like, oh my god, you know, here we are again, you know.
Yeah.
I know that feeling.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the case with all parties. Everyone, you know, if you see Greens are active people out putting up signs or whatever, you still just have that moment of, oh yeah, I know what it's like. And to be honest, I think there's actually a big gulf between people who are interested in politics and involved in political parties and people who are
That's my next question for you. Would you recommend that people who are interested in politics get involved in a party?
Mm.
One.
I can say that I've been involved in the National Party since I was 18, but I've never been heavily involved, mainly because of my schedule.
Yeah.
But I think that has put me in a really good position in that I don't have this tunnel vision of, you know, I feel a lot more free to speak out than perhaps I would do.
Yeah, I think that's actually quite a good point. And even, you know, you sort of, I think the less time, you know, the less time you spend in the party, you can sort of, well, you don't necessarily learn extreme partisan because if you're in a political party, people will think the government's doing a great job.
Yeah,
it's
like brainwashing.
Yeah, exactly. You're all, there's just no diversity of thought there.
Mm.
Whereas I think even on Twitter, you know, I'll see a lot of criticisms of Labour from the left, and that I still find very useful in that.
Yeah,
so I kind of think, well, actually,
I just have to say that
on balance, I couldn't imagine not being involved in a political party either, just because I think it has taken up a good chunk of my life.
I just have a different perspective, I think, because I think that when you're involved in a political party, you're reconciled to reality a lot more. You just know that you know, you understand about the Overton window, or that there's only certain things it can do, that certain things won't work.
That's true.
And when
you're not in a party,
but I think you especially notice that during campaign season, as opposed to a branch meeting.
True. But when you're not in a party, you know, like, it's just this responsibility-free carping. You know, well, I'm not involved in this, and it's going to cost me nothing, so, like, why can't you just do exactly what I want, you know?
Yeah.
And be jerks to the people I don't like. And Jacinda, why can't you just nationalise all the farms, you know? And
I haven't had that one come up yet.
But, you know. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Oh, well, should we, you know, we've got a sort of self-imposed 40-minute limit. So should we talk about maybe some other things? So we had a question, I think, was...
Oh.
And Josh, you don't have to... I would like to hear your perspective on this one, actually. So the question was, So Monique and I both... I think we're both willing to admit that we are sufferers from anxiety issues in the past, which results in us having panic attacks about checking our voicemails or our text messages.
I can tell you what's making me anxious right now is I see a little bug in your wine. And is that a bug? And I'm worried it's drowning. Oh, no, it's a bubble. Because I save drunk little flies from... Anyway,
You're like my wife. Like, I'm terrified of spiders. You know, I'm always like, Aisha, can you... I'm sorry, Bae, can you come and kill the spider? Yeah, I know. She always puts the spider on a piece of paper and, like, puts it out the window.
Yeah, that's what I do.
I'll just kill it. It's going to come back. It'll be angry that we throw it out.
No,
you know?
We're pro-life. Yeah. We're pro-life, Liam.
Being a good ethical person as well.
Anyway,
well, actually, I want to talk about that later on, but yeah, so anyway.
So the question was,
does our anxiety inform our conservatism, or does our conservatism inform our anxiety?
So I think my conservatism probably doesn't help the anxiety. I don't think it's the other way around.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I can see the point. Like, I think that, as we've talked about before, being conservative is about worrying a little bit about the unintended consequences, and valuing the good things in the world and wanting to keep them, and not to see them put at risk. So that is an anxiety. That is true. That is a form of anxiety.
Yeah.
But the type of anxiety that I have and medicate against, to be honest with you, like, I do have to watch it, is an unhealthy anxiety that's mostly about, for example, my health or my family being in danger or not being provided for. And, you know, as someone who's, I think I'm on top, you know, mostly on top of it, you know, watch it, but I'm on top of it. Is it, like, I really don't ever, one thing I really don't like is people glorifying in that aspect of yourself. You know, like, people say, oh, it actually just makes you really strong. It's like, shit, that is a weakness. To have had a panic attack is the worst thing in the world. You wouldn't wish it on anyone. And I don't like it when people say that it's normal or it's fine.
So I have a real issue with the phrase, it's okay to not be okay.
Yeah.
Because obviously it is. But I feel like that is an acceptance of the fact that it's just okay to, it's not that I understand the broad parameter, you know, like, I get it. But I don't like that because I think it does glorify it a little bit as well.
Yeah, glorifying is putting it maybe, I know I use that word, is putting it too strongly, but put it this way, it's something you should get help for.
I
didn't do anything, I didn't do anything that was sort of happy-ish. I went to my doctor, and I talked about my doctor, and, you know, we got a good clinical thing done that's actually not knocked on the head, but has, you know, makes me have a good normal life.
Yeah.
And what I would say is that it's not normal to live that way.
No. And you shouldn't have to or be told that you
should. It's not a strength.
Yeah.
But actually, also part of, I think, if you think about the only way that it's a gift or a good thing is that the lesson in humility that it teaches you
and empathy.
And it does give you, it does teach you both of those things, humility and empathy. When the leader of the National Party had problems, I understand entirely. It got me so wound up and angry when people were saying, well, he should have known before he did this, or, you know, because it could happen to anybody.
Yeah.
And you never know what might happen.
Exactly.
And when it does happen, you've got to get yourself the hell out of the situation that's making it worse.
Yeah. No, I completely agree.
Totally.
Yeah.
But in answer to the question, I think that political conservatism is a healthy and rational form of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
that looks at threats to the ordered way of life or the good things mm-hmm. of life and responds to them proportionately. Mm-hmm. And the type and generalized anxiety disorder is a bad thing mm-hmm. that's not that anyone can have mm-hmm. and doesn't really even relate to any yeah. political ideology in any way. Yeah. I don't know. Do you think it answers the question?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
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 I mean, obviously not a conservative, so I can't speak from that perspective. But I think, you know, most of my anxieties, which do exist, are more personal in nature.
Mm.
And even when they're related to politics, it's more how it affects me personally in the sense that, oh, I'm a week out from a campaign.
Yeah,
and,
yeah exactly.
You know, or a week out from the election. Oh, my God.
Time is a real thing for me. Just yeah, time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I mean, I'm a little bit older than you guys, and the passing of time is...
Yes, we've talked about this depressing...
The existential dread. I know, we're going to have to bring it up again. Okay, yeah. Well, Josh, when did you join the Labour Party?
So I joined formally in, it was either May or June 2015.
Oh, okay.
But right. I only became actively involved early 2016.
So do you remember the Gould Report?
The internal Labour Party.
Yeah.
That was a bit before I joined, but I'm vaguely familiar with
so
that.
The Labour Party had their 2020 for us in 2014, mm. and 2011, but 2014
and,
was the worst one.
And, yeah, actually got less of the vote than National did in the last 5.7.
Yeah, but they had the Green, you know, like...
No, but...
True,
you know,
yeah,
say
that's
National
true.
Got
put the flag down, that's true.
It's around the 25 mark anyway.
Yeah.
We're splitting hairs.
Yeah. 25.7 for National, though.
Labour got its lowest, but we got to what we would call in this modern times its lowest low, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And so they, for some reason, they got Brian Gould, who was like, couldn't win an election as Labour leader in the UK. So he was Labour. This is one of the things that actually makes me... Just to digress.
They always bring over
the Labour Party New Zealand has this real junior little brother with the UK Labour Party. Because they're a part of international network of Labour Parties, they've got this real kid brother syndrome. Or like, you know, which is even with Jacinda going over to work for Tony Blair and everything like that.
Yeah.
You know, back when that was acceptable.
Yeah. Well,
but anyway, I digress. I'm just going to get that cheap shot in and move on.
I'll allow that one because I'm not a big Tony Blair fan. So.
So they got Brian Gould to do this report, and that was meant to be confidential and to the Labour Party's ruling council or whatever it was, the top
New Zealand council.
And then I was instantly linked to Patrick Gower. If you weren't a member throughout all that, but if you were a member, would you have been annoyed that you didn't get to see the report, that they tried to keep the report confidential after such a disastrous election?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. I mean,
was the whole report?
The whole report was, I can't remember if they had an executive summary made public,
mm-hmm.
but the substance of the report was confidential to the New Zealand Council, and the whole thing was leaked to Patrick Gower, who then put the most sensational spin
on
it. I think he used the words rotten to the core.
Oh my goodness.
That's a very Patrick Gower term.
Yeah.
Again, that was a bit before my time, but speaking as a party member, I think, you know, if we're prepared to put the long nose in to actually try and get this party elected, then the party fails in being elected, then we have a right to sort of say, well, hang on, what went wrong?
Yeah.
And how can party members have a role in improving for that?
And what would you say if the New Zealand Council had said, well, that's proprietary to the board? We ordered it, we paid for it, so it's ours, and you can't see it.
Oh, we'd pick it outside Fraser House.
Yeah.
No,
but they did try to do that, of course. You know, it was only through the graces of Patrick Gower that they got out there.
See, I was only joking, so there you go. But again, I think, creating a very secretive culture around the party and the idea that we can't trust our own members, it's unhealthy and will drive people away.
But political parties in New Zealand are secretive.
Mm.
How many members of the Labour Party are there?
I don't know exactly.
Yeah.
Actually, I couldn't tell you. I don't know the exact numbers.
What are the finances of the Labour Party like at the moment?
Pretty good. I mean...
But do you know?
That's what I mean.
If it was a listed company, you would know.
Yeah.
But this is these are these organisations that decide what happens in the law, and because they don't have any legal form, there's no Act of Parliament that governs them in the same way that companies are governed. I mean, there's the Electoral Act, but they're not legal persons, legal entities, not corporate bodies. So you've got no idea. You're a member of some standing. Monique and I are members of some standing of our parties.
Yeah.
and yet it's so closely guarded. The only thing we know is that they have at least 500 financial members, which is how they can retain registration. That's it. That's the only thing we know. I bet that's the same with you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I probably don't know any more about the internal Labour Party dynamics than what you know about the National Party. And I suppose there is, you know, room for debate around whether political parties do need to adopt a more transparent culture.
Yeah. What do you reckon, Monique?
Well, I agree, and I'm looking forward to...
Have you been to any of the review meetings?
I'm going on Sunday night, tomorrow night.
Yeah.
I've heard through the grapevine, through reputable sources who have spoken to MPs, that one of the recommendations, and can you correct me if I'm wrong here, but didn't the board come out and say they were going to adopt all recommendations?
They did. Mm. For what it's worth. Well, I mean, the board doesn't get to choose what the party is about.
Well, I'd think that the recommendation that the National Party become a pro-choice party might get a few people up in arms.
It's bizarre, isn't it? I've heard that too.
Yeah.
It's bizarre because you'd think, well, we've actually been through, like, you know, so, you know, I mean, both, full disclosure, both Monique and I are pro-life Catholics.
And staunch.
That is a ethical position that we have.
And for me, it's a bottom line.
And it is for me too. But within the National Party, it's always been a conscience issue.
Yeah.
And, but also we've been through the pain and we've lost that fight.
Yeah.
And that fight is now relatively settled.
It's over.
So why would, if that's true, why would the party now try to humiliate us further by saying to all of to us, and there's a lot of us, we might not be a majority.
What did you
overall,
say, 750,000 about?
Yeah, so that's a good estimate.
Well, that's I know you said say that's a minority, but that's still a good proportion of the voting
that
population.
That is a minority, but it's a significant minority.
Yeah.
So that's to say, we don't want you in the party, or you have to choose.
Yeah.
What? How does that make sense?
It doesn't. And I think there are MPs who would no longer be a part of that. The National Party.
But it's not necessary.
Yeah.
But I mean, does it really make sense that the reason why we lost all those votes
didn't even come up.
South Island?
And
the rural, and where I live, one of the most religiously active parts of the country is Rangitiki, where I live. And we almost lost that seat.
Yeah.
Is that because we weren't woke enough?
Yeah, it's like, did we become not woke from February when we were polling at 46% to October where we were at 25%? Did we become not woke just in that period? Could it have been something else?
Or who was the last personally popular national leader, Josh?
Oh, well, gosh, if you put me on the spot, it'd probably be Bill English.
Yeah. Of course. Did anyone care?
A conservative Catholic from Southland.
44%.
Can I just put in my two cents here and say that I'm quite in favour of the National Party adopting this recommendation?
Because we'll no longer be a party.
Because A, I'm pro-choice, but B, it will see the National Party to meltdown.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, man. Like, you know, there are members of your party who are pro-life and who are valued and accepted members of your party, despite the fact that they are at odds with the majority of what their party wants on that. And there were multiple members of your party who voted pro-life the other night, right? On the safe space thing, without a ripple. So doesn't it strike you as nuts that the National Party would become more doctrinaire than the Labour Party would be on that issue?
Even the Green Party?
Oh, the Green Party is 100%.
No, but do they actually have a policy of pro-choice on the Green Party?
Yeah, they had one pro-life MP who was Nandor Tanjos. Do you remember him? Nandor Tanjos?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Who had he wasn't really pro-life, but he had a highly nuanced view on it. It was actually really interesting.
Right.
And actually, and that's a position on a lot of Labour's Pacifica and Māori MPs.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, I actually think those people are some of the bravest people in politics. Mm. Those Labour, can you imagine the pressure that those people come under? Jamie Strange.
Yeah. I mean, again, I want to stress that, you know,
you don't support.
You don't need to. You don't need to. Get throat clearing done.
but it does, you know, regardless of my own views on the policy, it is interesting that National would consider that.
I mean, from my perspective,
they obviously
don't
want us.
But hang on, no.
From my joking.
That's one report.
I'm just trying to infiltrate.
Yeah. If it's true, it's one report.
Yes.
If it's true, and so the other thing is, if you keep the report secret, right, then we hear these things,
and no one else needs to.
How can we contradict them? How can they be contradicted? Because the whole report is secret.
Yeah.
Which is the problem of having secret reports.
Yeah, and it does, you know, regardless of the views of party members, it does see them as not to
work.
Well, like, you know, so our party is probably a little bit more than half provincials who tend to be more conservative. All right, so if you say, look, we need to win an Auckland Central, you know, that's probably true. But we also need to bring back Rangitata.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And New Plymouth.
And New Plymouth. Yeah, that's right.
Actually, quite a few seats now, I think.
Yeah, that's Napier, yeah, and, you know,
Tukituki.
And thank God we don't have to win that Rangitiki, but it was really close.
Yeah.
You know? And that is.
I remember on election, I thought it
was going to happen. Oh, listen, I was doing.
Yeah,
TVZ
you were.
That night,
yeah.
And I was being. Everyone in that studio, Hillary, Barry, John Campbell, and Simon Dello, were all mercilessly teasing me on national television about the fact that Rangitiki was going to flip red. And it's one of the most religious parts of the country. And but the worrying thing about that was that, like, it was so close, it was on a wire. And I was this close to not voting in that election because I didn't get time.
Hang on. Ooh. Can we just say who forced you, Liam, to vote?
So Monique and friend of the podcast, Joe Ascroft.
Yeah.
So basically, I was like, I was going to vote, advance vote, but I ran out of time because I had wife on, I had work, and I have kids.
Because it takes that long to vote.
I had to fly up, and then I was just like, oh, I'll be all right. What's one vote going to do? So Monique and Joe.
We were out at,
me,
yep, literally.
And forced me to vote up here in Auckland, cast a special vote. Now, in the event, it wasn't needed, but that seat was so close that, can you imagine if he lost by just one vote?
I would have stopped speaking to you, I think, probably.
And I would have offered you a vote.
That's right. The Rangitiki where I'm from is such an interesting seat because it's solidly national. It's meant to be very Labour. National, but it's voted like twice for like social credit. It's like return social credit.
That kind of populist farming sentiment. That I mean, I'm from Auckland originally, and you know, social credit I think had one of the Western Auckland seats around Dyckville back in the 1960s. So there is that kind of trend of protest votes going social credit.
Yeah,
I. In the National Party, I'm supposed to be part of the Mount Albert electorate, but A, got no MP anymore, and B, Jacinda is the actual electorate MP. Sorry, I should have said there's no National MP there anymore. So I've jumped ship off to Chris Pink's, half an hour away, but you
friend
know...
Friend of the podcast, Chris Pink.
You've got to do what you've got to do, right?
Yeah. Well, you should run against Jacinda and Mount Albert.
Oh,
that
would
be cool.
That'll be...
Do we
could
do a podcast every week.
For my anxiety and my ego.
Who's the patron saint of lost causes?
St. Raphael. Yeah. No, but it's like Jeremy Greenbrook Held, who was the president of Navista when I was there.
Yeah.
He's actually quite a good guy.
Actually, one
he lives up the road
Sean
from
Key.
Me.
Well, it's actually quite a useful training ground. Running in
for Labour, maybe. Oh, yeah. Oh, totally.
Yeah, like running in a safe seat of the opposite party. It teaches you a lot about campaigning.
Yeah, I'm still not sure I want to run against Jacinda.
No, but you'd be in the news. That would be cool.
Yeah, exactly. How embarrassing.
No. Oh, you should... Listen, the more we talk about it, you should do it.
I won't be living in that electorate anymore.
You could still run in it, though.
Nah.
Okay.
Nah.
Family ties.
But, okay, so what's the point I was going to make?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, running in a safe seat?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe it's different in Labour. But one thing I would always advise people is don't buy... the assurances that if you we run on this hard seat this time, we'll take care of you next time.
Oh yeah, no, there's no loyalty.
They always say that.
Yeah,
it does have some.
Maybe after like three times, like Jacinda.
I think a lot of it depends on the quality of the candidate.
Yeah.
So it's probably true for some in the conference.
Right, okay, well, so I think there's probably enough politics.
Yeah, I think so.
And we'll thoroughly depress all me and Winnie Carr, and Josh is
always depressed.
Suitably smug.
I've just got 50% of my hair.
So, what's it been like here in Auckland under lockdown? Because, I mean, it barely affected us.
I can say that level 3, apart from not having malls open, didn't feel any different. Like, the streets were pretty busy, eh, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the part that I've actually found most difficult isn't so much lockdowns or anything like that, but level two, having to do uni online.
Uni.
Yeah.
God, how old are you?
21.
Jesus. Oh my God. Okay, what are you studying?
Geography.
That's right. Yes, yeah,
you know. What are you going to be?
An MP.
Well, he's got some other things to do in between, right?
You'd be
a good MP.
Okay, I don't want to curse anyway. I mean, I'll probably be at uni doing postgrad for some time yet. And yeah. We'll wait and see what
That's the traditional Labour way to be an MP now.
You
have to have a doctor. There's not so many doctorates, but there are a lot of senior lecturers.
Senior lecturer Kerwin.
Yeah.
No, but we'll wait and see what happens. But, yeah, I'm not really a work from home person. I like being on campus.
It is
hard.
Quite
difficult. Yeah, I mean,
during the first lockdown, I hated working from home. Part of it was having my children.
Yeah.
At home.
Thankfully,
Monique
and I are able to avoid that part.
I love them. But, I mean, my children are my life. But, you know, like, I'm trying to have this meeting, you know. But also, what I really miss so much is, because I've got a really tight team of five in my thing. Yeah. And I'm the oldest, and I'm the puffer bear kind of that team.
Do you call yourself that around them?
No, I do not. But it's really collaborative. You know, we all have open door policies, come walk in, bounce ideas off, and like the loss of that human connection, even if someone doesn't like other people, and that sort of collaborative atmosphere, really, I struggled with it so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it takes a lot to adapt to, and I think, you know, I probably during lockdown number one, after how many weeks was that? 6 weeks, I think I finally managed to adapt by the end of it.
I'm just
in general,
I'm struggling with the change because I've gone from dealing with hundreds of kids and parents a day to having myself and up to three others in the office.
Yeah.
So I'm really struggling with that even in level one. So going then back down, down to level three where you're up, where I'm at home, I am struggling with that.
Can I just say something too? So when did you go to level one yesterday?
Yes.
So you're at level two before.
Yes.
Which means what does that mean?
You're still supposed to social distance and
you can't go everywhere.
Bars,
like nothing under 50 people, over 50 people.
What about shopping centres?
Yeah, well, that's the weird thing. They're open.
Yeah. Can I just say something?
It's a waste of time.
Recommendation, I went to
Newmarket,
and it's. And you said it was going to be awesome, but it actually sucked.
Okay, that's because you're a provincial person who...
You and Sam Grover will be able to bond over your mutual...
Oh, Sam Grover hates Newmarket.
That shopping centre.
And
just Newmarket as a whole.
Suburbs, but like, honestly, so Plaza and Palmerston North, like, on, you know, like, it's a pretty big mall.
Okay, in comparison to that, the Newmarket, how big?
I don't know. Like it'd be about two thirds the size. It's bigger than any mall in Wellington.
Two thirds the size. Are you sure?
Wellington doesn't have much of a mall culture though. It's got Kiori, Johnson.
Do you know what Wellington does have? What? A CBD that doesn't have hills.
Yeah, that's true.
God, I love it.
Yeah. But
the downside is you have to be in Wellington.
Yeah, with frostbite.
But everything, we'll have to earn that EU rating somehow.
Yeah.
But the
geography was good. Yeah. It's over.
Fuck. But that grid layout, right, of Palmerston North, we have in malls as well as streets, so it's very easy to navigate in the malls. You said to go to this mall. I wanted to get some white.
I don't know what then.
So white shoes with black saddle detailing.
Like a cowboy boot. That reminds me of.
So you know, more like Fred Astaire or.
Oh, tap shoes.
Yeah, I guess a little bit. But you know, like, I wanted a bit of. I'm gonna go on TV tomorrow morning. I want to have a little flair.
Yeah, but your feet are covered when you're on Q&A.
I'm not, because I'm on a Q&A's couch.
Oh.
News Hub is a desk. I actually prefer a desk.
Yeah.
But there we go. And like, honestly, like, it was so hard to navigate. Like, I was like looking at, what are the shoe places? And like, I was lost. Constantly.
That's why you just wander and then you find.
And it's like three levels, you know.
But that's great. You get a few laps.
No, like, I'm constantly surprised at how much shopping sucks in Auckland.
Do you know, totally off topic, but if I was on Q&A with a couch, Because when I'm on couches, I sit with my legs crossed. Yeah. I wouldn't be able to not... I couldn't sit there with them down.
Why?
Because I have... I don't know. My instinct is to cross my legs.
Well, you're not...
See, I can't sit still, so I'll probably just be fidgeting the whole time.
Well, you can't... Obvious. You can't go on Q&A.
Why not?
Because...
There's
only one cassette you have.
I'm wearing active wear.
There's only one conservative, like, allowed in New Zealand media, and it's me.
I know.
All right.
Don't worry.
I was going to say, you and Ben Thomas are fighting that. Ben's not a conservative.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God, this table is having
Ben is not even centre-right. He's centrist. Ben is one of my favourite people. I respect him enormously. I'm insanely jealous of his skill as a writer.
You're a good writer.
No, but Ben is the best. Oh. And I'm extremely jealous of his twittering. But what are Ben's right-wing positions?
Well, he doesn't like Labour.
Oh, no, he went one more way. One of his to the right positions.
He's a small government.
From here on in, the podcast consists mostly of me ranting about how I am not jealous of Ben Thomas. However, it has been decided that we will not include that part of the broadcast. La, la, la.